The content of our program today is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Now, for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from a number of business sources, some of which are the Wall Street Journal, Reuters, Bloomberg, the Triangle Business Journal. North Carolina cancels incentive agreement for the Deutsche Bank subsidiary. Over in Cary, North Carolina canceled an incentive agreement with Deutsche Bank, the German bank, on Tuesday, after the German bank told the state that it would be unable to meet hiring requirements because of job cuts at its campus in Cary. Now, last month, in a letter to the state's Commerce Department, the global banking giant requested the termination of the job development investment grant that it received in 2015. That agreement was officially ended after a vote by the state's Economic Incentive Committee meeting on Tuesday. Deutsche had received multiple incentive packages from the state in recent years as it gradually built up a global technology center in Cary. The Wake County town has been the home of Deutsche Bank's Global Technology Center since 2009. In 2015, the bank had promised to add 250 new jobs in Cary in return for $3.4 million in state incentives. The jobs were based with its tech subsidiary, DB Global Technology, and were expected to have an average salary of $85,600, and Deutsche was also awarded as much as $5.6 million in incentives in 2013 when it announced plans to more than double its size by adding 431 jobs by the end of 16. The NNO previously reported in 2009 when it originally chose to establish a presence in Cary, the company received a grant worth up to $9.4 million. Well, last night at midnight, July the 15th, we all know what was to happen at that time, but there are no more delays. What we need to know about the tax deadline. As the coronavirus pandemic took hold this spring, the federal government postponed the traditional April 15 filing deadline. So for those of you who will be waiting, making a payment, or with other questions, here are a few answers. Do I have to? The answer is yes. In most cases, you must file and pay your taxes by last night, the 15th. Taxpayers who needed more time can request an extension on the IRS website. That'll give them until October 15 to file. However, an extension to file does not mean added time to pay. So those planning on filing later should estimate what they owe and make that payment by last night. And the next questions, I can't pay now, what do I do? Well, go ahead and file your taxes even if you can't. The IRS is willing to set up payment plans or make other arrangements with taxpayers who cannot pay in full. Many of those can be set up online, and the penalty for failure to file will be much more expensive than the failure to pay. Now, what about refunds? Well, the IRS is still processing and issuing refunds, most within 21 days. Those getting refunds will be paid interest dating back to April 15 if they file on time. The interest rate is 5% per year through June 30, and starting July 1, it drops to 3% per year. The interest compounded daily for refunds, and any refund issued after July 1 will get a blended rate. Well, that was as of last night. I hope the answers to some of these questions will apply also for you. Well, bankruptcy eases for small business. Twisted Root Burger was a success, Texas success story, expanding from one casual restaurant in 06 to 24 sites, including restaurants, bars, and a brewery and a theater. Now the company is moving fast in another direction, into bankruptcy. The chain shut down in March. Some sites reopened in June, only to be shut down again as the virus cases surged. Mr. Jason Bosso, who is the co-founder, said, "I'm not going to open that restaurant at half the revenue. I'm going to walk away from those restaurants. I'm not going to set myself up for failure." Here in Raleigh, a project is planned for Wake Forest and Whitaker Mill Roads. A pair of real estate companies are partnering to conquer a large project in a part of Raleigh that's seeing a boom in development. Raleigh's SLI Capital and Atlas Stark are working on plans for the East End Market PD, calling up for up to 500 residential units and nearly 400,000 square feet of commercial space of 5 points. The project is situated on 11 acres at the corner of Wake Forest Road and Whitaker Mill Road. He says, Mr. Brian Kane says, "We've been working on the project for a couple of years and fortunately assembled enough land there to submit the master plan. We're excited for the prospects. Altogether, the East End Market rezoning would allow for up to 344,000 square feet of office and medical space, 9,120 feet of retail and 40,000 of bar and restaurant space, and 500 residential units. These may include townhomes, apartments, and other types of multifamily units." Mr. Kane says, "We anticipate starting on the first phase later this year." And over in Cameron Village, more condos are coming to the area there as part of the town continues to fill in. Construction is set to begin soon on a place called The Stevenson. That's units priced from $300,000 to $600,000. Now, Lock 7 Development out of Washington, D.C., is developing the 20-unit contemporary condo community that is named after a downtown variety store specializing in musical instruments that started in 1907 and moved to Cameron Village in 1950. Units will vary in features and layouts, with each coming with access to rooftop terrace, complete with outdoor kitchen, gas grills, fire pit, and more. Condo layouts will range from 639 square foot one bedroom to 1300 square foot three bedroom, and certain units will come with flex spaces and private balconies. The Stevenson is an exciting project to us because the location is perfect mix between a quiet residential neighborhood, but literally a block away from shopping and dining. You really get the best of both worlds, so says Dave Gorman, a principal of Lock 7 Development. He goes on to say, additionally, the site has windows on all four sides, which is rare for infill development. He says, "I'm thrilled we were able to incorporate so many opportunities to get outside, both through balconies and a huge communal roof deck." Well, back nationally and internationally, U.S. business groups press China on trade. More than 40 associations call on Beijing to buy more manufactured goods. As senior U.S. and Chinese economic officials plan to discuss China's compliance with a trade deal signed earlier this year, more than 40 American business groups called on Beijing to step up purchases of U.S. manufactured goods, as well as energy and other products as part of the agreement. In a letter sent Monday to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He, the business association led by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce voiced strong support for the Phase One trade pact, but pressed both sides, especially China, to redouble efforts to implement all aspects of the agreement. The letter was signed by the Business Roundtable, the U.S.-China Business Council, and other trade groups covering swath of industries, including aerospace, autos, semiconductors, and pharmaceuticals. The groups expressed their concerns that China is falling short of the overall purchase targets despite progress it has made toward buying U.S. farm products. Well, as factories start bringing back workers laid off at the beginning of the virus, some are retooling to meet virus-related demands. Designetics, a firm near Toledo that makes windshield coating systems, now has about half its 73 workers trained to make custom protective barriers to prevent coronavirus transmission. The switch started when a local hospital asked for a particular size barrier for ultrasound sessions with expectant mothers. Orders flowed in from grocery stores, restaurants, and beauty salons. Even a Tucson, Arizona art gallery ordered transparent barriers to keep its artwork visible. "It's really the big thing right now," said Design Next president Sidney Sprawl. He goes on to say it's been a nice addition to what we've lost on the automotive side. Well, after a storm-independent youth, the wind and solar energy industries have matured into boring, profitable middle age. This year's plunging interest rates make that a more appealing proposition than ever for investors. Wind turbines and solar panels, which once proliferated thanks to government handouts, now produce energy more cheaply than coal and natural gas. Chinese manufacturers sell solar panels at a fifth of the price a decade ago. Bigger wind turbines and better installation methods have halved their cost. These developments tripped up a previous generation of green-minded investors, but look to have run their course. Subsidies now mostly focus on upgrading the distribution infrastructure. Wind and solar are intermittent, but can provide a constant flow of electricity in combination with storage, batteries or hydro or gas. Well, the U.S. budget surpassed $3 trillion, the deficit that is, in the 12 months through June, as stimulus spending soared and tax revenue plunged. That puts the federal government on pace to register the largest annual deficit as a share of the economy since World War II. As a share of GDP, the 12-month deficit came to 14% last month, compared with 10% in February of 2010, when the United States was still recovering from the last recession. In June alone, the deficit widened to a monthly record of $864 billion, the Treasury Department reported on Monday. That's nearly as much as the gap for the entire previous year, which totaled $984 billion. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, has projected the annual deficit could total $3.7 trillion in the current fiscal year that ends September 30. But the gap could widen even further if Congress and the White House agree this month on another round of emergency spending, which economists have argued is vital to keep households and businesses afloat until the economy begins to recover. Well, silver prices climbed to the highest level in nearly 3 years Monday, lifted by factory reopenings and soaring investor demand for precious metals. Front month futures linked to the metal rose 3.8% to $19.70 a troy ounce in New York. That's recording the highest metal settlement since September of 16. Silver prices have soared 68% since their nadir in mid-March, outstripping gold, the S&P, and an ICE B of A index of government bonds. Well, the largest U.S. banks signal that the worst of their virus recession is yet to come, opting to stow away tens of billions of dollars to prepare for an expected wave of loan losses. J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup and Wells Fargo said Tuesday they took large hits to their second quarter profits to stockpile collectively $28 billion to cover losses as consumers and businesses start to default on their loans. The provisions amount to a sharp increase from what they put away in the first 3 months of the year, reflecting a shift in their assumptions about the length and the severity of the pandemic's economic toll. J.P. Morgan, the largest U.S. bank by assets, said it put aside extra to prepare for an unemployment rate that remains at double digits well into next year and a slower recovery in GDP than the bank's economists assumed 3 months ago. And while we're on that matter, a top official at the Federal Reserve said difficulty suppressing the new virus will pose substantial risks for the U.S. economy, including a possible double dip in economic activity, and warned that the nation faces a long, slow recovery, even if those hazards are avoided. It is important for policymakers to recognize that the economy will face headwinds for some time, Fed Governor Lyle Brainard said on Tuesday. He goes on to say that calls for a sustained and comprehensive framework of accommodations. Mr. Brainard said the recovery in spending and hiring in recent months was due largely to rapid and sizable fiscal support, such as one-time relief payments and extra unemployment insurance benefits that are set to expire in the coming weeks. Fiscal support will remain vital, he says. Well, General Motors and Ford are still struggling to keep workers on the job as the virus cases surge nationwide, forcing the automaking giants to cut shifts, hire new workers, and transfer others to fill vacant roles. The absences are hampering efforts to recover from the economic havoc wreaked by the pandemic and return to normal production levels after a nearly two-month shutdown this spring. A GM assembly plant in Wentzville, Missouri, that has been running three shifts to restock the company's depleted supply of mid-sized pickups, is cutting one of the shifts to better cope with worker absences, the company said. Well, in the airlines, Delta Airlines trimmed plans for more summer flights amid rising COVID-19 cases nationwide after a $5.7 billion loss for the latest quarter, and it underscored the depth of the crisis facing the aviation industry. Delta will have the number of extra flights it adds in August to 500, and capacity in the September quarter is expected to be at best 25% of the level a year ago. U.S. airlines are forecast by analysts to have losses of more than $23 billion this year, but are adding back flights at a faster clip than demand to protect market share. The goal is to position themselves for a return to the pre-pandemic level of demand that is expected to take 3 years or more. Mr. Bastian of Delta says we expect this to be a very choppy recovery. Well, blue chips rise 557 points after a late day rally. This is the close of business on Tuesday, the 14th. The Dow Jones Industrial Average raced higher late in the trading day, clinching a third straight session of gains and its biggest point and percentage advance of the month. Investors recently have been weighing worries about the uptick in the virus infections versus signs that the economy is slowly recovering from the downturn. The earnings season kicked off in earnest with the latest quarterly results from the big banks. J.P. Morgan and Citigroup's earnings beat analysts' estimates, but the firm's results highlighted extraordinary economic uncertainty ahead and a worrisome outlook on the health of their corporate and consumer clients. Both set aside billions of dollars for rising loan losses as they girded for defaults. Well, even a record-breaking rise in oil demand next year won't be enough to spur recovery back to pre-virus levels. That's according to OPEC. In its widely read monthly report, the cartel said it expected that the world's demand for oil would increase by 7 million barrels a day next year, after a forecast of 8.9 million barrels a day decline in 2020. While annual demand for gasoline, diesel, and other refined products was seen rising by a record amount, efficiency gains, including teleworking and teleconferencing, may cap oil demand gains in 2021 to remain below pre-crisis levels of 19, so said OPEC. Well, Chinese companies used to be atop the internet food chain in Asia. They have fallen from their perch in India because of Beijing's diplomatic stumbles, and U.S. companies are looking to climb on. Alphabet's Google said Monday it will set up a $10 billion fund to invest in India over the next 5 to 7 years, including investments in other companies, to speed up adoption of digital services. The news comes after India banned 59 Chinese mobile apps recently, following a clash along the two countries' border that killed 20 Indian soldiers. Well, disagreements between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department in recent months slowed the start of their flagship lending initiative for small and mid-sized businesses, current and former government officials say. The differences centered on how to craft the loan terms of their $600 billion Main Street lending program to help support businesses through the early stages of the virus pandemic. Fed officials generally favored easier terms that would increase the risk of government incurring losses, while Treasury officials preferred a more conservative approach, people familiar with the process said. Treasury, which has put up $75 billion to cover losses, resisted recent changes to relax the terms. Well, back on China, they aren't poised to propel the global economic recovery. Getting the global economy back on its feet will not be easy, but it will be even tougher without more help from China, the locomotive that powered recoveries from the world's last economic emergency. During the 2008-2009 financial crisis, China's soaring demand for raw materials and other goods boosted growth across the world, underpinning rebounds in places like Brazil and Germany. Some countries, like Australia, avoided recession almost entirely because of trade with China. Now, China isn't poised to help as much this time. Despite signs of a solid rebound recently, its economy has been hit much harder than the 2008-2009, limiting its ability to lift other nations from recession prompted by the virus pandemic. Well, Beijing and Tehran move toward partnership in defiance of the United States. Iran and China are seeking to cement a wide-ranging partnership that would deflect U.S. economic pressure and ease Tehran's global isolation. An initial draft of the Iran-China deal, which still requires Iranian parliamentary approval, would pave the way for Chinese investments in the Iranian free trade zones and for joint projects in other countries such as Syria and Iraq. It would expand cooperation between the two countries in defense and counterterrorism. And it says that under a 25-year partnership, China would import sustainable levels of Iranian oil, but offered no further details. Well, hedge fund manager Chatham Asset emerged as the winner in a bankruptcy auction for McClatchy. That's ending 163 years of family ownership for the newspaper chain and increasing financial investors' control of the American publishing industry. The sale, announced by McClatchy on Sunday, must be approved by the judge overseeing the bankruptcy. McClatchy publishes some 30 daily newspapers, including the Miami Herald, the Sacramento Bee, the Kansas Star, and, obviously, our own Raleigh's News and Observer. The sale price for McClatchy's asset could not be learned. A purchase agreement should be filed in the bankruptcy court in Manhattan in the coming days. Well, the coming earnings season poses a big test for investors and analysts who say they are flying blind like never before. More than 180 companies in the S&P 500 have pulled their earnings guidance in the wake of the economic crisis wrought by the current virus pandemic, limiting the visibility of investors. That has led to the widest dispersion in earnings estimate among analysts since at least 2007. Economists generally agree the recently completed second quarter was likely the trough of the downturn, but the extent of the damage is still unclear. J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Netflix will be among the first companies to open their books when they officially kick off earnings season this week. Jack Adkins, managing director of the freight industry at Stevens, said, "I've either been on the phone with folks in the industry or talking to clients nonstop since March. every day, 7 days a week, we've been trying to figure out what's going on. It's been extremely busy and challenging. The stock market has remained resilient despite the hazy outlook. S&P has surged 42% from its March low thanks to high levels of stimulus from the Fed and Congress. Although the rally has slowed over the past month, the index is off just 1.4% for the year 2020. Well, down in Orlando, fans willing to brave what is usually one of the most heavily trafficked public spaces on Earth, they are descending on Walt Disney's Orlando theme park in hopes of escaping the dreary realities of the virus pandemic. But reality isn't so easily set aside. Hugging Mickey Mouse and Goofy is off limits. Instead, they wave from afar. Other Disney characters moseyed through Walt Disney World mounted on horses guided by masked escorts on foot. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters, underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and Money Matters is available at a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us 832-5138.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org. You can also give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. 5138, the North Carolina Reading Service. We breathe words into your life.